The Guardian.
Support for this podcast comes from Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes creating a professional website for your business, personal brand, or portfolio so easy, it's newsworthy. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer Guardian to get 10% off.
Football Weekly Extra.
Boom, what a midweek. The ludicrous side in the Champions League and the ludicrous side at MK Dons. More in the cup shocks than that two girls video. The pod says Cosmin Motsi, he's got Motsi. Meanwhile, after the worst meeting with Dons since the last episode of The Sopranos, Louis van Gaal has 4 days to save Man United's season. What will the trip to Turf Moor mean for the action-faced Dutch Supremo? There's a big look forward to all the weekend's action, but like only the London clubs really, because, you know. And plus continental events, Sid Lowe on Ibar, Porto's Wonder Kid and other bits in today's Football Weekly Extra. Wow, still reeling for an extraordinary week, but what a pleasure to have Paul McInnes here.
You say that. Yeah, nice to be here, though.
Yeah, okay, good. And Ian McCourt.
Good morning.
In his jauntiness. And Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
The voice of reason. So many shocks and surprises this week. I'm going to start with Ian McCourt, who just told us that there are two foodstuffs that he's never, ever tasted, right? Listeners, would you believe that one of them is fish fingers, right? The other is kebabs. Ian, how have you gone through, like, what age are you?
Just turned 32.
How have you got to 32? A, looking so young, may I say. And secondly, without ever having had a fish finger or a kebab.
I don't know.
All right then, listeners. First with all the big stories.
Is it a pointed refusal to eat them, or they've just never appeared in front of you?
Well, I don't know. The kebab shops are not particularly big in Dublin, or at least they weren't when I was.
How long have you been in London for?
3.5 years.
Are you single?
No.
All right then.
So if you just kind of
did you find Captain Birdseye sort of sinister or something? Did he put you off?
A little bit, yeah.
Where did you go to university?
In Dublin.
Right, okay. Barry, can you confirm kebab shops in Dublin? No?
There are, yeah. There's a famous chain of eateries, which I don't know if they're still a going concern, but called Abra Kebabra.
What's your favourite kebab
I've only had
shop
about,
in Paul? Have a shout out.
I'm a kind of, I don't like kebabs, but I eat a lot of falafel.
Huh?
I like the falafels. I find them very tasty.
Good. Excellent. On to the football then, listeners. And, well, we've got to start with them, really, haven't we? Wednesday's fairy tale penalty shootout success for Ludogorets into the Champions League. Barry, did you not see this? You only missed the biggest football story.
I literally have no idea what you're talking about.
Really?
It's ideally suited for Vine as well. It's like 6 seconds worth of action. You can just watch it and catch up.
Well, I don't know about this. Okay, Barry, who's going to tell Barry that this is like Ian never having had a fish finger and a kebab? This was Steaua Bucharest against Ludogorets, which means people from the region of wild forests. Basically, it was the second leg of their Champions League qualifier.
Yeah.
And 89th minute, it was 0-0, and Ludogorets were going out until, boom, absolutely incredible volley.
From Motti.
No, it wasn't. The volley was from Vondersen. It was like that Danny Rose.
Oh, wow.
Do you remember? Yeah, it was like that one. Words can't do this justice, but basically that's the goalkeeper's just stood there. He can't believe what's happened because he knows now it's going to go to extra time. So it goes to extra time. No goal scored, but what happens? As it heads into penalties, 118th minute, Ludogorets get their keeper sent off. Yikes. So now they've got to stick a centre-half in goal, this fellow Cosmin Motsi, and penalties go up. They flip the coin, and the Steaua bloke says, "You go first, Ludogorets. You take the first penalty." Who steps up to take the first penalty? Only Motsi again, who's wearing his goalkeeper's jersey now and the goalkeeper's gloves. He steps up and he scores. Boom. And then he goes in goal, doesn't get to the first one, saves the second one, ends up saving two penalties as Ludogorets, who've got a population of, I don't know what, the town's got a population of a couple of thousand, stadium's tiny, etc., go into the Champions League draw.
Fantastic.
Amazing.
Motti.
Motsi.
Yeah, Motsi also used to play for Steaua's rivals, Dinamo Bucharest, as well.
Yeah, there you go. And he used to play for Siena. in Italy. But he only managed about 180 minutes in the course of an entire season. So he wasn't a big name in football terms.
And he was off his line of about 6 feet for both penalties.
That's very, very true. It was curious that, because the referee, it was almost like they felt, yeah, go on, let him.
Well, yeah, and plus when you've got this guy who's volunteered to do that, volunteered to take the first penalty, you imagine he's kind of quite a pumped up individual as well, and you might not want to mess with him.
Yeah. Anyway, producer Ben feels we've done enough on Ludogorets, who won 3 league titles, were only started 13 years ago, but sacked their manager within the first 2 weeks of this season. And last year, which was quite patient by the standard, because last year they did it after just one match. That fact courtesy of Archie Rinter, bespoke facts to the football connoisseur. Crazy. Anyway, well, the draw for who Ludogorets are going to be facing in the Champions League group stages, it happens later today at 5, so we can't talk about that. Curses! Apart from the fact that Liverpool will draw Barcelona and Luis Suarez, we don't know what's going to happen. So we'll have to move on, thank you for your patience, listeners, to the other big midweek shock, which wasn't Fulham winning a game. It was Man United at MK Dons. Barry, you saw this one.
I did, yes.
All right, then.
It was a huge shock. Not really a fairy tale upset, because no one likes MK Dons. and, you know, a lot of people don't like Manchester United either. It's sort of one of the most unpopular clubs in the UK, knocking out another of the most unpopular clubs in the UK. But, you know, Manchester United fielded a very much a second-string team, but did have a lot of big names in it. David De Gea, Shinji Kagawa.
Welbeck,
inverted commas, Anderson.
Anderson.
Who's a big and a name.
Yeah. Johnny Evans was in there, wasn't he?
Johnny Evans had an absolute mare. It was his first game back in a long time. He was responsible for the first goal. He should have conceded a penalty, but for some reason, Stuart Atwell, who had a good view, didn't give it. I'm not one for harping on about referees. I do appreciate a very good, difficult job, but I just think he's incompetent. I don't think I've ever seen him have a good game. But yeah, MK Dons were well worth their win. I think the match showcased United's total lack of strength and depth. They have a lot of injuries. They left out some big name players. I'm not sure why, because it's not like they're going to have a fixture pile up or anything this season. And they thoroughly deserve to lose.
All right.
Do you want to hear my theory on why they left out all the players?
Did they want out of the League Cup?
A. And B, I wonder whether it might have been a little bit of a signal to the board. If you're trying to negotiate another £35-40 million signing or two before the end of the window, maybe.
Right. Well, our man across the trying to negotiate other big signings story is Ian McCourt. We'll come to you in a second on that, Ian. But MK Dons, people may not like them and that, but they did look astonishingly assured.
They did very much so. I mean, it's a horrible club set up in a horrible way, but fair play to their players and their manager, who, you know, they're just guys trying to make their way in the game, and they did very well and were well worth their win. United sort of bossed them in the first 20 minutes, but once MK Dons got into the game, they
were picking them apart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the number of just really silly errors by Manchester United players, and it's been indicative of all their performances this season. Just giving the ball away carelessly inside their own half, and if you do that, it's difficult to see them going into any game now and not envisaging them conceding at least one goal.
Interesting. All this came just 24 hours after their neighbours, Man City, had beaten Liverpool 3-1. So it kind of puts into perspective Man United losing MK Dons from League One 4-0, the kind of mess that Man U were in. We should be careful talking about United, because Tommy United posting in to say it's got to the point where it's genuinely hard to take a Football Weekly panel seriously when it comes to talking about United. Just please stop it already. It's embarrassing. United will finish in the top four quite easily, says Tommy United. And yes, it's us that's embarrassing.
Yeah. I think you watch that game on Monday night and you do see the difference between the two squads. And that is, you know, City have a spine of players who are at their peak and, you know, remind you of the decline of Rio and Vidic and Evra, which they've had to, you know, wholesale replace this season.
All right then, Ian. Louis van Gaal, according to all the next morning's papers, hitting that panic button. And what's the response been?
Well, there's a lot of talk of Daley Blind moving, which would be the addition they need, because he can play in defensive midfield but also plays along the back line as well, which is where they look to be at their most vulnerable. Certainly, I saw the game against Sunderland, and it looked like somebody had thrown one of those bumble balls in, and it was jumping around, and they were, you know, trying to avoid it all the time. There's also a lot of talk of...
What's bumble ball?
It was that sort of electric plastic toy that had these spikes coming out of it, and you had to throw it around, and... No? Draws a blank from everybody?
No, I like the one from Star Wars when he's learning the Force. Stick. Is it that one?
Oh, that's good. Or you could just substitute the word grenade and the reaction would be similar.
Grenade. Anyway, right, so he might be coming. Papers talking about Arturo Vidal as well, but I'm going to say I don't think that's going to happen.
I can't see why he would move.
Also, because Juve just got a €10 million windfall. Some sources say more than that, actually. Why? Because Napoli... The only team, possibly, in world football who defend in a more comic fashion than Man United at the moment, got knocked out of the Champions League themselves. And that means that Juve and Roma divide all the TV money up just between themselves. They don't have to share it with a third club. I didn't know it worked like that.
Wow.
So they get, the pair of clubs have both got a fat windfall from Napoli going out.
So Serie A has two automatic qualifiers to Champions League, is it?
Yeah, two and a playoff. Yeah.
Who gets Celtic's money? Can we have it?
Well, that's a very good question, Barry.
Is it up for grabs?
I imagine it is. Send in a letter.
Alex Salmon's probably already got his fingers on it, I reckon.
Well, in the meantime, they've got Di Maria. Boom, that's sorted. And he's ready to take on Burnley at the weekend. The Garfi tweets in. He says, I'd like a really good explanation of why Di Maria and Mata can't play together. Anybody?
I don't think that's the case. But I think it is. I do think there's a question over Mata's position in this team, if they continue to play...
Where are you going to play Di Maria?
Well, in the Argentinian midfield, he would play in a midfield three. So you'd have a sitter...
Shame they've lost a nanny then, isn't it?
Sitter, right?
Because they're going to have a sitter. Yeah.
Okay, well, he plays in a midfield three with Argentina. And I think that's where you might look to see him play in this setup currently. I can't really see him playing left wing back all that often.
No, you wouldn't. Some people say right wing back because you've got Luke Shaw and this Rojo fellow or Rojo.
Well, I think Rojo will play left centre half. But it's obvious that Louis van Gaal is buying players who are flexible and can play in more than one role.
Is he buying these players? Or is it just Edward hitting his own panic button?
No, I doubt that very much.
Okay. All right, because a lot of people have regarded this and Mata before him, and indeed Fellaini before him, as classic examples of panic buys by somebody who doesn't really know what they're doing.
I think Mata was a panic buy.
Hmm. Yeah, I think so too.
Di Maria, no.
I think he makes more sense.
He
can play left, he can play centre, whereas Mata's not very good on the wing. He's much more of a central player.
Right.
He's also man of the match in the Champions League final. I think tactically, he's quite an intelligent player too.
Okay,
I mean, Mata was Chelsea's player of the season two seasons running. So he's a good player, but I just think if you're going to play this system, the number 10 role, you have to have two very defensive minded midfielders to compensate for that.
How many have United got? Is it none?
None. Well, they got Darren Fletcher.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah.
But you think it might be a variation of Darren Fletcher, Herrera, and Di Maria. But where does Mata go?
You could also see that Di Maria's sign could be a sign that Van Gaal might move away from this 3-5-2 business and move towards a 4-3-3 and shift Rooney out to the right, Van Persie through the middle, and Di Maria on the left.
Right,
that would make sense, wouldn't it? But why spend the entire pre-season bedding in a new tactical formation and persisting with it?
Well, maybe because he's out of his depth. That's what Dave Ellis reckons. He's putting his system over his players. Surely win the game first, then slowly push the formation as the season moves on, says Dave Ellis. I don't know, Burnley, can they get a first win there? What do you think, Barry?
Yeah,
They lost
possibly.
On their last visit. Do you remember when Burnley came up last time?
Robbie Blake
scored the winner, yeah. I don't see any reason. I mean, would you back Manchester United to win any match with any degree of confidence at the moment? I wouldn't. I think Burnley will score. They might score more than one. And Manchester United haven't really given any indication that they're likely to lump on a big score against anyone at the moment. So, yeah, I wouldn't be particularly surprised if Burnley won it. I'd say they'd very much fancy the chances.
All right, okay. Did you know, this from producer Ben, that after Di Maria's signing, Man United have now assembled the most expensive squad ever in the Premier League? He reckons it's £401.2 million compared to City's £344 million and Chelsea, on a bargain basement, £348 million. How about that? How about that? Right. I think we've already reached the end of part one.
We're going to talk about Arsenal?
Yes, we are, after this. Well, actually, it says Chelsea-Everton here. But I tell you what, for you, Paul, we'll go Arsenal next. Arsenal, they did it, but only just.
Yes, they did, only just. I thought they looked very much like an early season performance. But I thought there were signs of to be hopeful, actually.
Mm-hmm. What were they?
Oh, Jack Wilshere. I thought Jack Wilshere played well. I thought he looked sharper. He was. He lasted the game. He had a few very positive contributions. Yes, he nearly gave away a penalty.
There should have been two penalties for Besiktas. I think Wilshere was only one of them, but there should have been two.
Yeah.
Debushi was the other one,
thanks.
And I also thought Monreal had a good game.
All right.
Sanchez played a little bit better. And you know, Ozil was ineffective, but these players are coming back. You can see the fluidity starting to emerge, I think, in that team.
They're coming back. The weekend saw Sanchez played up front, didn't work. Wenger changed it, put on Giroud, whole team looked much better. Boom, he's out. He fractures his leg from a ball being kicked at his leg. That was a bit surprising, I thought. And he's out for 4 months.
And Arsenal won't be replacing him.
Well, that's what Wenger says. Is that true?
Well,
rumour mills in the court.
After the Manchester, he was saying that he had Sonogo and Campbell and Podolski and then Walcott still to come back. But those, I mean, Sonogo and Campbell are pretty wet behind their ears when it comes to Premier League experience. And Podolski hasn't really shone for Arsenal. And Walcott's still not back yet, so he really needs to.
Right.
To get going on that transfer thing.
Wenger, eh?
There was talk of Falcao after the match, which he kind of smiled but said no at the same time, so maybe
a lot of clever folk are knowingly tapping their nose and saying Higuain, a former Arsenal
That would be a great buy.
And Higuain, I don't think, was very happy at not being in this year's Champions League after their exit against Athletic Bilbao.
And much better,
he wouldn't be cup tied, I believe. I know that's extraordinary, having played in the Champions League preliminaries, but I believe he wouldn't be cup tied. Anyway, there's no basis in fact for this. I'm just saying that. Barry, you're frowning at me.
Oh, no, I'm just intrigued to hear that he wouldn't be cup tied.
Well,
did the Legia Warsaw secretary tell you that?
One thing I was wondering from the Arsenal game.
Oh, yeah.
Did you notice that Callum Chambers got booked for coming on too early?
Really?
Yeah, he was subbed on.
Ooh.
And the ref was very much in his own game at that time, very much enjoying giving out cards and dictating everything. And he came on before the ball came up, and so got a yellow card and had to trot off the field and trot back on again.
Wow!
Wonder how many times that's happened.
I can't think it's happened many times, has it?
I actually got someone sent me in the post for I'm not sure what reason a little referee kit.
Oh,
which part of it is a little black wallet with a red card on one side and a yellow on the other. And the other evening I actually found myself in front of the mirror, like, giving red cards to people who weren't there. It was slightly pathetic, but it does feel quite empowering.
Absolutely.
Just taking your red card out.
Did you kind of change facial expression and did you find one that worked?
Are you talking to me, defender? I don't see any other.
Well, I've been on a referee course with Dermot Gallagher before, and when you're given the red card, you hold it straight up. You don't actually,
brandish it
in someone's face, because that's very aggressive. And
did they teach you how to run backwards, Barry?
They taught us how to run sideways. Oh. Crabbing, it's called.
Crabbing.
Yeah, if you're a linesman.
Okay, what was the most amazing thing you learnt on your referee course?
The most amazing thing I learnt, which probably wasn't amazing, I was just amazed that I'd managed to go my entire life without realising it was a thing.
Is it was that, your metaphorical kebab, let's say.
When the linesman awards a corner.
Yeah.
When he flags for offside, he holds the flag sort of diagonally upwards, diagonally downwards, or straight to indicate which area of the field the offside player is in. I didn't know that
either.
I can imagine that subscriptions to refereeing courses are going to be going through the roof after that.
Anyway, now, Arsenal are going to be at Leicester, who lost at home to Shrewsbury this week. How about that?
Yeah, but they've generally acquitted themselves quite well in their first two games, haven't they?
They haven't.
And look like they've got pace on the break.
All right, are they going to turn over the Gunners?
Is it the King Power?
Yes.
I'll go draw.
Thanks, Paul. Thank you very much. Well, Arsenal's last away game, of course, was that 2-2 draw, the one that Giroud turned around, really, his entrance at half-time. Away at Everton. Everton this weekend have another big game. They are hosting Chelsea. Wow, quite the storyline here with Eto'o and, indeed, Lukaku going up against their old pal Jose.
Yeah, I don't know if that's the most interesting thing about the game.
Tell me, what's the most interesting thing?
I think it's going to be more interesting to see how Fabregas does against a decent midfield pairing. Because he's going up against McCarthy and Barry, who are two very decent central midfielders. And it'd be interesting to see how he copes with that, whether he has the freedom that he's had in the past few games.
Right, when they've been up against newly promoted sides.
Yeah.
Right.
It's slightly ironic, though, that it looks like Chelsea will be out without their striker, but up against two strikers they deemed surplus to requirements, because Diego Costa is, I believe, hamstrung.
So they say, meaning that Jose will have to resort to who?
Well, that's it. That's
Fernando Torres?
Well, he's supposed to be on the move to Milan.
No, I think they put the brakes on that.
Oh, I see.
I think his wage demands put the brakes on it initially, but then after the Diego Costa hamstring and injury scare, they've decided that they might hang on to him a bit more. Otherwise, it would be what? Shirley is the false nine?
Don't call me Shirley.
Oh, Didier Drogba, of course. Yeah, I don't know if Jose would start him. Maybe he would. We'll see. We'll see at Goodison this weekend. Everton won this fixture last season 1-0. Not sure who's going to be between the sticks for them, whether it be the incredible Thibaut Courtois or Petr Cech. But here's the thing. Philippe was suggesting that Chelsea fans, mean-spirited Chelsea fans, just don't have a song for their 10-year stalwart keeper, Petr Cech. Oh, my days. Posts in saying, au contraire, au clair. Have a go at these as punishment for suggesting such a horrible thing. And he lists 1, 2, 3, 4 Petr Cech songs. Yeah? That's you got this to the tune of Coming Round the Mountain. If JT doesn't stop you, Pedder will. If JT doesn't stop you, Pedder will. If JT doesn't stop you, yeah, etc. There's one to the tune of Mild Man to Dust Man. Pedder Check is magic. He wears a magic hat, etc. Pedder Check has got his hat on. Hip, 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 hooray. Yeah. Pedder Check has got his hat on because without it, he can't play. That's a nice one. And there's another one which has got sweary stuff in it. And look, here's James D. Baines, who's joining in the fun. Right? He suggests this one, they Petr Cech themselves before they wreck themselves. That's good, isn't it?
That's great.
Sing that one.
Never been sung.
Has it not?
I'm sure it's never been sung. All the best chants that you read on the internet have never been sung.
All right then, happy to help. Chelsea fans, happy to help.
Support for this Guardian podcast comes from Squarespace. When you need to know what's in the news, you turn to The Guardian. When you want to create something newsworthy, you turn to Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it easy to create your own professional website for your small business, online store, professional portfolio, or blog. Getting started takes only seconds. Just go to squarespace.com, and to support this podcast, use the offer code GUARDIAN to take 10% off.
Here's a question for you, Barry, and indeed, panel. Which four teams have made the most Champions League appearances? Which four football clubs have appeared in Champions League matches more than any others?
Are you talking about European Cup and Champions League?
No, just Champions League. Have a go at this yourselves at home there, listeners.
I'd say Manchester United, Milan.
Manchester United is one of the four.
So Milan isn't.
Correct.
Juventus.
Which club has won more Champions Leagues?
Real Madrid.
Real Madrid.
Bayern Munich.
Nope. Okay, Man United, Real Madrid, the other Spanish side.
Barcelona.
There we go, Barcelona. And who's the fourth one?
Arsenal.
Porto.
Oh.
Porto, little FC Porto. And they're going to be in it again this time after a very exciting 2-0 win over Lille. 3-0 on aggregate, and they're looking great. Tom Kunde, of Portugal, posting in that their new Spanish coach, Julen Lopetegui, or something like that. 4 games, 4 wins, and they've got a bit of a side, Porto. I reckon they're the side you want to avoid, particularly because they've got the hot Ruben Neves, who's only 17, became the youngest ever scorer in the Portuguese league in the opening weekend. And he was also captain of their, I think it was under-19s at the European Championship. They got the semi-final. He's the next Euro wonder kid you need to keep an eye on. He did a brilliant little roulette against Lille in the Champions League. Yeah. Anyway, so they're in there. Let's see. Malmo are going to be in there. They'll be the first Swedish side in the Champions League since 2000. How about that, Ian?
Roma in Group 4? Pot 4, that's kind of a tricky one as well.
Ooh, Roma. Yeah. Although they have just sold top central defender Benatia to Bayern Munich, who've also picked up Xavi Alonso. If we get Sid in a second, we can ask him about that move. Not in any of those pots will be Celtic, who lost and Football won in Legia Warsaw's now infamous tweet. Football won, they said, as soon as Celtic went out. It's understandable that they'd be a bit bitter about that.
It's difficult to have any sympathy for Celtic. They had to beat Maribor at home to go through and they couldn't do it.
Mm. Derek Young tweets, have to say Celtic got what they deserved. Hope they draw Legia Warsaw again in the Europa League. That'd be quite ironic, wouldn't it?
That club has been bled of all its resources player-wise without ever replacing it with any kind of good talent, no money around. I think it's quite easy to feel sorry for Celtic, actually.
There you go. Yeah, Derek Young. Yeah. Your anti-Celtic agenda.
Yeah.
Right.
Let's pro-Celtic agenda. Maybe that's the problem.
Well, maybe.
We've never been accused of being pro-anything in Scotland.
Nope. And this isn't the time to start. This is the time to dial up Sid Lowe for even more Eurotastic news.
Hello, Jimbo. How you doing?
I'm very well, Sid. How are you?
I'm not too bad, thank you.
You're going to be in Manchester next week.
You're picking up
our crumbs.
Well, yeah. No, I'm doing Spanish football only. I wasn't invited to live Guardian Pod.
All right, are you doing the big 600-seater venue?
Viciously shunned by you lot.
Right, are you doing the big out of town venue, super arena, megadome thing like we are?
No, you're doing the 600-seater venue, aren't you?
Yeah,
because obviously when they found out that I wasn't there, they unbooked Manchester United's ground. They said, yeah, there's just no point.
When you say 600-seater megadome, how many of those seats will actually have people sitting in them?
Quite a few, actually. Although, producer Ben urges me to mention that there's been some mix-up, and there are actually one or two tickets left. So they've just released a few last tickets. Producer Ben wants to tell you that if you want to come along, actually, when we do our live thing, it's £12, and tickets are still available. And there's a link on our Football Weekly page. So there you go. And we put a link there for your show, too.
Is there? Oh, yeah. Good. Excellent.
All right. I know, we rang you up to talk about Spanish football, Sid.
Did you? Okay. What would you like to talk about?
Well, Ian wants to talk about Real Madrid's new kit. Away you go, Ian.
Oh, yeah. No, I just thought it was very cool.
Did you like it?
Yeah, it's designed by this Japanese guy, Yoji Yamamoto.
That's the one.
Who's obsessed with black.
And dragons. Right.
It looks like what I imagine Sam Allardyce's kimono would resemble.
I just can't understand. You imagine that Sam Allardyce would have a kimono?
Yeah.
Of course he does.
I mean, he'd certainly have a butcher's apron, but I'm not sure about a kimono. One of those blue and white striped ones.
How's it gone down? This is Real Madrid kit I'm talking about. How's it gone down with the Spanish, with the media, with the fans there?
Well, I must admit, I'm amazed how much it's been talked about. It seems to have gone down pretty well. Everyone quite likes it, or nearly everyone seems to think they quite like it. I just wondered with this whether this is the same dragon that got slayed by St. George. And the reason that that's significant, in terms, if we're going to start talking about symbolism, and of
Barcelona.
Course, events like this, they always talk about symbolism. St. George's is the patron saint of Catalonia, St. Jordi, who slayed the dragon, and St. George's cross is on Barcelona's shirt for that very reason. I must admit, I'm surprised the Catalan media haven't made a bit more of this.
Right, not overthinking things as usual, Sid. Good news. Let's talk a little bit about Barcelona, who can't sign any players, but when they keep producing youngsters like Munir, that may not be a problem.
No, and this was inevitably what a lot of people have been talking about over the last few days, that, you know, Barcelona can find their way through if they keep producing good players. But generally speaking, haven't produced strikers. And they had Bojan, who very briefly looked like he was going to be very, very good and then didn't turn out to be quite so good. Munir is an interesting case as well, because Munir was playing in Galapagar, which is up to the northwest of Madrid, about half an hour drive out of Madrid, a bit more half an hour drive out of Madrid. And of course, everyone's thinking, oh, hang on, Real Madrid and Atletico Madrid, let one slip through here. He looks very, very good indeed. He's been really good in pre-season. And the goal on the opening day was fantastic, as you can imagine. There's now been a big explosion about, wow, isn't this kid amazing, amazing, amazing. Now, obviously, long-term, over the course of the season, he probably won't play a huge amount, but he's not a bad addition to the squad. He's also quite interesting because, actually, I hope I've got this stat right. I think he's only played 8 times for Barcelona's B team, so he's more or less leapfrogged kind of one stage, if you like, in the natural progression.
All right. And thanks for that, Estrella. The other big story, of course, on the opening weekend, it was Eibar, who, as their own tweet points out, they are one of only 5 teams that have never been relegated to the second division in Spain and the only one that has won all of their games in the top division.
And they've never conceded a goal in the top division either, which is brilliant. Yeah, now Eibar is... Hang on, I feel I can get the dog to be quiet. Eibar is a fantastic story. Really, really quite extraordinary. I went to the game at the weekend, obviously wrote about it on a site on Monday. This is a town of 26,000 people. Now, to put that into context, you could take every single person in the entire town and you could put them in the Camp Nou and there'd still be room for 71,000 more people. And you know, stadium of 5,000, which has been expanded by about 700. They have no money. They're traditionally a second division B team. Now, the second division B isn't just the division after the second division A. It's then 4 groups of 20 teams. So it's anything from a tier to the seventh tier. That obviously makes it even more incredible. I saw play against Real Oviedo in the playoffs back in the season, so it's probably only about 15 months ago. And this is a second division B playoffs. 7 of the players who played against Oviedo that day played at the first game of the first division at the weekend, and they beat Real Sociedad.
Wow, and they've got the champions next up, Atletico Madrid, is that right?
Yes, they have. Yeah, they come here to Madrid at the weekend.
So how have they done it, Sid?
Well, how they've done it, they're a side that basically, I mean, it sounds horribly cliched when you start talking about how they've done it. The old cliches about commitment, very aggressive in the way they play. Not aggressive as in nasty, but very, very intense. They push teams back. I think they play really quite nice football. They've been very successful in terms of finding on loan players from elsewhere to come to the club and perform. And then, obviously, the downside of that is they have to effectively rebuild the team the following year. Although there are some players who keep on. They play in a very small stadium, which the cliche says it's very difficult to go there and get a result from. I'm not sure that's necessarily the case, but certainly it's a smaller pitch than other teams have. And I just think they've got a very, very good manager. I think they've built a very clear identity in terms of the way that they want to play, and they don't waver from that. And actually, they've got one or two pretty good players.
Super, super. All right, Sid. Listen, one other thing then quickly is Xavi Alonso is off to Bayern Munich. Daniel Coyne saying, is his move the best value one of this transfer window? What do you think?
Well, I think potentially it's a very good move from Bayern Munich. He's going to cost a little bit under 10 million euros, so round about, what's that, 7.5 million pounds, 8 million pounds. And although he'll be 33 in November, I think it is a pretty good move. I think he's the kind of person who will fit the way that Bayern Munich play. I think if you look at Real Madrid over the last 2 or 3 years, they've played poorly every single time he hasn't been in the team. They've lacked fluidity, they've lacked control. From his point of view, of course, I think he just felt it was the right time to go. I also wonder if there's a kind of a sense of apprenticeship here. This is him getting a chance to work with Guardiola, having already worked with Mourinho and Ancelotti and Benitez and Santoshak. And I think I don't think it would be a surprise at all if Alonso became a manager, and also if he became a very good one.
Brilliant. Sid, thank you so much for that roundup. We'll speak to you soon.
Fantastic. Speak to you then.
Nice one, Sid, in Spain. As you mentioned, Athletic Bilbao beating Napoli. I think it was 3-1 on the night, 4-2 on aggregate. In what if you're a fan of really, really, really ludicrously bad defending, I would urge you to watch this game. This game is even worse. It really is. On each guy, there's afterwards they're saying we have psychological problems. They have big problems at the back, but just something different happens on each one. For example, on one occasion they think it's offside, it's not, and they all stop and the Bilbao player races on and just basically puts it away. Into another one, the goalie comes rushing out. There's three Napoli defenders all basically with control of the ball. And they see the goalie running out and they all collectively decide, oh, that other fella's taking care of it. None of them do. And the Bilbao player races in, scores open goal. On another one, this was really nice. You had one of the, I think it might have been Britos, who was defending against one of the Bilbao players. And then Majo's got his man. It's a corner for Bilbao. Majo's man peels off him and runs around the other side of one of his teammates. Problem is that teammate's being held by Britos of Napoli. So Majo's trying to get to him, but bizarrely decides to run through this embrace. So these two players clutching each other and Majo in the middle trying to fight his way through like a man trapped in a barbed wire fence. And by the time he eventually gets through, the guy's scored and gone home.
What you need to do is cover yourself in washing up liquid.
Right.
It makes you very slippery and you could just actually pass through.
You could just run round them or get your teammate to let go when he sees that you're trying to get... But anyway, it was comedy defending. It ended 3-1 and lots of angry headlines in the Italian papers today. But Juve and Roma, as I mentioned before, are quite happy because that means Napoli don't get any of the Champions League money. Good. That's enough of all of that. Hey, let's move on to the Premier League after this. The home straight now, Barry. We've just got some pesky Premier League fixtures to talk about, and then we can, you know, go off and get early nights, wear caftans, whatever it is we want to do.
I can't.
What are you going to be doing after this?
Go to White Hart Lane.
Oh, is there a press conference?
No, there's a football match.
Oh, it's the Europa League qualifiers, isn't it?
Tottenham Hotspur against Limassol from Cyprus that we're playing.
Brilliant. Love a bit of Europa League.
It's actually a bit of a weird one, I think, because Pochettino was very critical of the Europa League last season when it looked like Southampton might qualify for it, and he said it could kill a team. But it's a tournament Spurs have a realistic chance of winning if they go for it, and there's a Champions League place up for grabs for the winner. But I still think they also have a realistic chance of finishing fourth. So what do you do? Do you fight on both fronts, or concentrate on one or the other? You know, I think maybe they'd be better off.
Maybe they could try and win a few games, see how it goes, and then
yeah, because all the teams above them from last season, they'll be competing on two fronts too. That's one of the things you got to do.
Three or four, some of them, like teams like Man City, for example, who, as we mentioned before, beat Liverpool 3-1. Liverpool actually looked quite good first half hour of this game, but then
first half hour fell away after that. Yeah,
City just ran all over them, and still you had the sensation that they had more in reserve.
Yeah, I just, again, just to labour the point, just the strength of that squad, and particularly, you know, Vincent Kompany, when he's in that team, there's a real kind of resolution at the back, which many teams just won't be able to get past.
Mm. Fernando looked good too.
He did.
They host Stoke this weekend, Ian. This could be the game that Boyan and Crouch click. And that's quite a scary thought for City, isn't it?
Bayern was on the bench at the weekend against Hull, wasn't he? I think got towards the end.
It's his birthday today.
Is it? Mm. How old's he?
I think he's 24.
Is he?
Bayern fact.
Boom. Good. All right. What other games we got Premier League-wise? Hey, Newcastle are taking on Crystal Palace. Happy days are here again, Palace fans. Because Neil Warnock's returned, tremendously successful in his previous stint. A lot of talk that with him at the helm, Wilfried Zaha's going to be making his way back as well. Plus, they got a big victory in the Cup over Walsall.
Dwight Gale hat-trick.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, Neil Warnock's appointment seems to have divided opinion at Palace. He left them when they went into administration and went to QPR, sort of, which was... jumping from the frying pan into the fire. And he divides opinion anyway as a manager. I have to say, I like him. My limited dealings with him, I've always found him very nice. I take people as I find them. But when he was plugging his book and told me he would never manage again almost exactly a year ago, he told me a good story about when he was cycling through Richmond Park and stopped, and this giant stag sort of came through a clearing, and they were eyeing each other, and he started discussing team selection with this deer.
Right.
Which was perhaps a sign that it was time maybe for him to retire.
Okay.
It's kind of like Tony Pulis, though, but without
Success.
Yeah, the success and the attacking sophistication, the counter-attacking stuff.
Well, he was very successful with them last time before, you know, administration hit and all that.
But at a lower level.
He's very good at lower level management, but in the top league, he's not particularly good. He got relegated with Notts County from the first division. He got relegated with Sheffield United from the Premier League. Didn't.
Carlos Tevez cheated. I mean, come on.
Well, that's true. But and then he got sacked from QPR when they were 17th in the table.
Yeah, but then everyone, you know.
Steve Parrish, I heard him talking about the appointment, and he didn't seem hugely convinced that Warnock was going to do a great job. He's sort of straight. He's a safe pair of hands.
Ah, okay. What about Jason Puncheon? A lot of people asking how this leaves Jason Puncheon, who had sent a remarkably controversial series of tweets about Neil Warnock, his suitability to be a manager, his approach to letting people into the team and what he would want them to do before they got us put in the team. All sorts of controversial topics.
Well, apparently they had cleared the air talks, so whether or not the air has been cleared, I don't know, but... I'd say, look, they'll be all right, I'd imagine.
I don't know.
It's good news for Paddy Kenny, who's without a club at the moment.
Yeah.
And possibly Michael Brown, if he's still knocking around.
What are they going to do away at Newcastle?
They're going to draw, aren't they?
Are they?
Yeah, I think
that's a good point for Palace, if they can get that.
A decent point, yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't really seen anything of Newcastle this season yet. Have they been any good? I thought my initial sort of impression was that they'd have a very bad season, but then they seem to have brought in some decent players.
They've brought in a lot of players.
Well, I think they're okay. They're just lacking somebody up front. I don't think they've scored this season, have they?
Yeah.
They lost against Man City in the opening game. They drew away to Villa, didn't they? 0-0?
Yeah, 0-0. And they had some... I mean, it was a terrible game, but they had some half-decent chances. And the Kabeya fella particularly missed one from 6 yards out. So
Remy Kabeya?
Yeah.
Okay. Super.
I mean, the interesting one for me, QPR Sunderland.
QPR Sunderland? I mean, why? Why are you so interested in that, Paul?
Well, because I've got a thing about Harry Redknapp, and it just looks like the wheels could be coming off already. I mean, they got turned over by lower league opposition in the League Cup. They got absolutely wonked by Spurs on Sunday.
They've yet to score.
There's also talk of Tim Sherwood being lined up already.
For QPR.
Which just seems to me kind of indication this club has not learned any of the lessons that it should have done from its previous period in the top flight. Meanwhile, Sunderland, good side. Looked like the beginnings of a good side. Anyway.
Seemed to be all right, yeah.
No Barini, but yes to Ricky. Ricky Alvarez, or just Ricky as his shirt declaims him. Very, very exciting prospect for you there, Barry.
Yeah.
Are you a fan of Ricky Alvarez? Have you ever seen him at work?
I don't know much about him, to be honest.
Okay, basically, he was bought for, I think, a substantial amount of money. I'm going to say 3 seasons ago by Inter, and was a byword for awfulness.
He should fit in well at the stadium like that.
He would always try and do something fancy and give the ball away, and then get another chance and try and do something fancy and give the ball away. And then, somehow, it all clicked into place at the start of last season. He was doing really well. I think he got injured, and then we didn't see anything more of him at Inter. But, you know, we'll see.
It doesn't sound...
He's had 7 caps for Argentina.
Mm.
Yeah.
I'm slightly concerned about Connor Wickham, which is a sentence I probably said before on the podcast. But, yeah, he scored, what was it, 5-3 to help keep Sunderland up at the end of last season. Now he hasn't scored in 5. And
what have you done for me lately, Connor Wickham?
He did well on his holidays.
Oh, what happened on his holidays?
I think he either went to Vegas or California, but he made a new friend. She was very, very attractive.
Oh.
And then one day he tweeted a picture of his tea or his dinner, and it looked very unhealthy, so I was slightly concerned. This is what, you know, it was lots of fatty food, eggs.
Right.
Fatty bacon, hash browns. It wasn't the stuff I wanted.
You think he's not living an athlete's life?
It wasn't the kind of dinner, like, far be it for me to tell anyone how to live their life, but it wasn't the kind of dinner I would expect to see a Sunderland striker
eating. Why do you think he tweeted a picture of it?
Yeah, you know, people tweet the pictures of their dinner.
Yeah, why do they do that?
I don't know. Because they like food's very important in their lives.
Yeah, but
I do that.
You tweet pictures of your dinner?
Yeah, and then I often send them to my sister just to annoy her.
I think listeners are all going to say, Ian McCourt, get yourself a kebab with fish fingers and then tweet a picture of it.
Yeah, and then eat it and tell us how it felt.
Yeah, that's extraordinary. That's like people who've never seen Star Wars and that. You can go and have a kebab or fish fingers and it'll be your first time ever. What a revelation awaits.
Well, my girlfriend's German. She tells me that the best kebabs are in Berlin or Hamburg, and so I'm going to Berlin in October.
Brilliant.
Maybe I'll try one then.
All right, listeners. At Ian McCourt, get on that by October. could be seeing some crazy
he'll kebab. Change his handle to fish fingers. It'll be so fishy by that point.
Right. I'm going to move on immediately. And Swansea West Brom is also on our radar. Three wins on the spin for Gary Monk's Super Swans because they beat Rotherham. Bafetimbi Gomis, their new signing, getting the goal there. And oh, Sigurdsson, one of your favourite players, Barry. He's looking on fire since his return there to South Wales.
Yeah. Another thing in Swansea's favour, West Brom have never won a match away from home in the Premier League in August. This is their last chance for this year.
Or possibly ever, says producer Ben.
I didn't want to say that.
In other teams with names beginning West News, West Ham will be facing Saints. They lost on penalties to Sheffield United midweek in the League Cup. Saints, how are they doing? They got a 2-0 win at Millwall in the League Cup. It's the League Cup, etc. How do you see this one going? West Ham, because they were all free-flowing and creative. Zarate scoring, Downing with that excellent goal as well. It was a new look, Hammers side, last weekend, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's early days, and you know, West Ham were as stodgy in their first game as they were flairful in their second.
Mm.
Meanwhile, the inverse... Oh, don't start. Right. I'm hungry now. It's nearly lunch. But the inverse could be said of Saints, who had a good performance against Liverpool and then looked a bit insipid.
Against West Brom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And... Yeah, I wonder about Saints. I think, you know, they without that, they without Jay Rodriguez, obviously without Lambert, they lack that focal point in the minute, and they really need that Pele guy.
Shane Long.
Yeah.
Who's rubbish at finishing.
He's rubbish at finishing, but he could.
Shane Long came on last Saturday and played on the right side of midfield, which seemed a bit odd.
That is odd, yeah.
I remember he had a couple of blinding goals for West Brom last year. But
that was
not
probably
many.
It.
He's never going to be prolific. His career average is 1 in 4.
Mm.
He gets in good positions, though. He just needs to work on his confidence, I think.
All right. Aston Villa Hull. Yep, that's right.
Good start to the season for both teams.
Mm.
And
certainly
Villa
is.
Looking a lot more robust at the back, and Hull nearly held on with 10 men at the weekend.
Mm. Villa got knocked out of the cup at home to Leighton Orient.
Yeah, he doesn't really give much of a stuff for the cups, traditionally, Lambert.
All right, okay. Hull have beefed up further with Michael Dawson.
Do you know he's from Wensleydale, but he doesn't like Wensleydale cheese?
All right.
Norwich, I don't like Admiral Nelson.
Was he from Norwich?
Norfolk.
It's not a food stuff, though, is it?
It's not
the food. What would be the...
Coleman's mustard. I do quite like that. Yeah. I didn't like it, but now I'm getting into it as
really?
I get older, yeah.
Do you like mustard, Ian?
Yeah.
Coleman's mustard?
Big mustard.
Love
fan.
Mustard.
Small doses on ham sandwiches only.
Yeah.
Really? Is that all?
Not on hot dogs?
I'll put Coleman's mustard on
American
anything.
Type mustard.
If only I had a big enough receptacle filled with it.
I find it's really good for when you go and eat in the canteen.
Yeah.
Because like quite often the food can be a bit bland.
Bland.
You just stick loads of mustard on it.
Right. Well, you see, my go-to condiment in that scenario, and I actually keep little mini bottles of it in my man bag for this.
You don't?
I do, is Tabasco.
Oh.
They sell these little kind of inch-high bottles of it.
Marks and Spencer's burger sauce for me.
There you go.
Hot pepper sauce and jerk sauce for
right.
me.
Foodstuffs or condiment manufacturers. Producer Ben will put our address on the on the Football Weekly page. So, and if you have a condiment that you think is not getting a fair crack of the whip on the pod,
do you put these?
We really, I'm really into condiments. So
I'm really into
in.
This Tabasco in your man bag thing.
Oh yeah.
I mean, do you put them in other plastic bags in case they burst? Because
no,
I mean,
they're small and they're made of glass. They're very robust.
Okay.
The lid's nice and tight too. On the
Yeah.
But presumably, you could also, if you were to be beset by an assailant on the street, you could also whip that out, crack it open, and shove it in their
Flick
eyes.
It in their eyes.
Just a thought.
Absolutely. Do you know what we haven't talked about yet? That's right, Spurs fans and Liverpool fans. It is Tottenham Hotspur Liverpool, which is that Sunday?
Mm. Yeah.
That's a big game on the Sunday, isn't it? Wow, Spurs are top of the table.
Mm.
This finished 5-0 to Liverpool last season. That's not going to happen this time, is it?
You don't think so, no. Spurs were very good last weekend and Liverpool, yeah, they faded and they were a bit indecisive at the back.
Mm.
The big talking point for this is obviously going to be Mario Balotelli's debut.
Obviously.
And I think Rodgers has already confirmed that he'll be making his debut. So it'll be interesting to see how he fits in with everybody.
How he fits in, where he fits in. What
he has
do?
A history of doing well on debut.
Ah.
And then sort of not doing so well after that.
Right. And Spurs, of course, will have played in the Europa League on the Thursday night. So they traditionally do very badly at that, at the next fixture, don't they?
They are at home for both of them, though. So it's not like they have a lot of travel in between.
What do you think, then? Spurs-Liverpool?
But I'll go draw, because I can't call it.
No, I can't call that either.
I've got a funny feeling it might be Liverpool Crisis Club.
Really?
Time. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I might go for Spurs.
I'm with Paul. I think Spurs are going to win.
Right. It's nice. Very, very exciting match. I'm really looking forward to seeing how that goes. We'll be back on Monday. Have yourselves a super, super weekend. Barry, I know you'll be available to TalkSport listeners on Sunday morning.
Yes.
11 o'clock. Paul, what have you got planned for the weekend?
I'm going to go watch Norwich-Bournemouth on Saturday.
Could go top of the league, no?
Could go top of the league. I think it's going to be an interesting game. Things are buzzing around Carrow Road.
Buzzing.
Early in the season.
Lovely. Ian?
I'm working for most of it.
Right, but working in inverted commas, because you're probably going to some top glamorous football fixture.
No, I'll be in the office.
Okay.
Well, you are going to have fish fingers, though.
Yeah.
All right.
And have some fish fingers.
All right, I look forward to hearing about that at Ian McCourt.
I'd recommend, by the way, melting cheese over them and then having them...
Not his first time, Barry.
Melting cheese over something makes it instantly 100% better.
Yeah.
Not sure that's always the case.
Even if it's your first time doing something else, melting cheese over it.
Right.
Enhance the experience.
And then what am I doing this weekend?
Oh, what are you doing this weekend?
Well, I'll just be kind of kicking back and relaxing. Saluting viewers in India on Saturday morning. And then on Sunday evening, it's the return of Serie A. There's some big matches as well. If you wanted to see, Barry, what's going to happen this weekend in the Bundesliga and Liga and all that, 7 o'clock BT Sport 1, that'd be the place. But anyway, that's enough of that, listeners. We'll be speaking to you on Monday. Bye for now.
Support for this podcast comes from Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes creating a professional website for your business, personal brand, or portfolio so easy, it's newsworthy. Go to squarespace.com and use the offer Guardian to get 10% off.